B-Pod Studios.
Felger.
I don't know, guys. Am I going to play? Am I not going to play? What am I going to do?
Maz.
Yeah, Maz, you stupid. S-T-O-O. Stupid Maz.
It's time for Felger and Maz, presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Allen firing downfield. Intercepted Butler at the 20. Butler 30. He's back to the 40. 45-50. 45-40, 35-30, cut back 25-20, 15, and Allen finally tackles him inside the 15. The Butler did it!
Little highlight from last night, which is where we're going to start. Titans and Bills on Tuesday Night Football here on Felger and Maserati, coming to you on Wednesday, October 14th from our Town Fair Tire Studios. Myself, Maz Murray. This is brought to you by DraftKings here on 98.5 The Sports Hub and simulcast across New England and the country on NBC Sports Boston. What'd you make of last night, Maz? What are your takeaways?
Practice? We talking about practice? Who needs freaking practice? Who needs practice? So look, I was impressed by Tennessee. I thought Tennessee would be one of these teams this year that came back to earth, still unbeaten, all that layoff, no rust at all. And I think the Bills are pretty good. They sort of, you know, they were flawed all over the place last night. But I think the Bills are a pretty good team. I don't know if they're a great team, but they're a pretty good team. But to me, the takeaway from that game is you look at it and go, so let me get this straight. Tennessee couldn't get into its facility for basically 2 weeks. Then they go out and steamroll another undefeated team. I mean, I don't know how you could possibly overlook that last night.
Yeah, I think there was a lot that I liked about last night. First and foremost, it was the middle finger, a giant middle finger to the Corona Nanas that want everything shut down and the league stopped. And well, what are we going to do? And how's this going to keep happening? And oh, my God, that really affected the Tennessee Titans last night. But for those of us that kind of mocked the Ryan Tannehill contract, kind of looks worth it. He looks pretty good. And for those of you, the Mike Felgers of the world, that are always preaching coaching, coaching, how much coaching matters, yeah, I think you get a quarterback like that who's always looked like a quarterback but was surrounded by idiots, once had to work with Adam Gase. I don't know. You put him in a place where you get Mike Vrabel and guys that know what they're doing, like, you get more out of him. He looks pretty good.
Well, don't those two things, both your things, go back to coaching? The way the Titans looked after it was two practices in 16 days, I think, Maz.
Sure.
And the way the quarterback looks. Does that go back to coaching and the program?
Yeah, I mean, that was the other thing I took from it. How is it that Tennessee had that limited amount of practice look like that and the Patriots didn't look as sharp? And maybe just Brian Hoyer? Is it that simple that Brian Hoyer sucks? And it could be. So, like, I just think that, look, again, I'm not telling you that the league is fair this year. Okay, because it's not. It's not. It's a COVID year. So, but the whining, it's really more the whining by the Patriots side of it that does get to you. And you say, well, wait a minute, Tennessee practiced twice in 16 days. As I said, basically 2 weeks, a little more than 2 weeks. And they went on, didn't have any problem, played on a Tuesday night, blew away another undefeated team. So, like, they seem to manage just fine with it.
So, I don't want to go too far. I mean, it's a natural takeaway, right, to say maybe these guys don't need the practice time that the coaches are making them, you know, undergo on a weekly basis. And
no, that's silly. You need to be practicing.
Of course, yeah. And I don't believe that you could do that every week. But I think on the odd week where, you know, you have limitations, you can get around it.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't want to go too far with it because I think the lack of training camp practices has impacted the sport. I mean, I think the quality of tackling and defense overall has gone way downhill the last couple of years because they don't hit each other in training camp. So like, I don't want to endorse less practice because I think it's hurt the sport as it is. Not that it hurt Tennessee last night though. They were dialed in. And I think it does go back to Vrabel and the coaching and the program there that they deserve credit. They had one pre-snap penalty on offense. One, they jumped off sides once. And
after not playing as long as they had, like, what was it, September 27th? Like, that's pretty impressive. I thought that there was going to be sloppiness, and I saw very little.
They were dialed in, you know? So that goes back to coaching program. And also, you have to say this, the makeup of those players. Because, yes, they were practicing when they were told not to practice, and they got together when they were told not to get together, and that shows, on one level, a lack of control there in Tennessee. But what does it also show? A bunch of competitive guys who give a crap, who wanted to get together and practice. You know, I mean, I don't know. On one side, I bet Vrabel loved it. like, you know, despite us telling them or the league telling them don't get together and practice, these guys were so consumed they got together in practice. They were that competitive and they wanted to, you know, so I think it says something about the makeup of that team.
Yeah, they didn't want to lose their edge. And the time that we're living in, people look at them and like, oh, how dare they? Like, I don't know. I've heard Zoe arguing for it. Like he was saying, I've heard him a few times on Zolak and Bertrand saying, look, if I was still playing, I'd probably be out there, you know, and I'm not going to blame a guy if that's what they're trying to do. They're not trying to do it just to piss everybody off. They're just, they don't want to lose an edge. They're a good team. They see that they might actually be able to accomplish something, so they want to get out there. And just back to Tannehill, like, and I look, yeah, does he still have limitations? Sure, but since he's got there, 36 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. He's got a winning record. I think it's 11-3. Like, he's been pretty damn good. He's got good weapons, too. By the way, A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown taking 19 picks after N'Keal Harry. To me, the best wide receiver taken last year. You want to argue for DK Metcalf, fine. A.J. Brown, better than N'Keal Harry. Another one you whiffed on, Bill.
Okay, so, I mean, you know how I feel about that. I don't care about the weapons. I care greatly about the fact that Ryan Tannehill, when he came into the league, was... came into the league with Joe Philbin as his coach. That's who brought him into the NFL world. You know who his head coaches were in Miami?
Dog crap.
Joe Philbin, Dan Campbell. Remember him?
Oh, the bro yeah. coach.
And then Adam Gase. It's like...
You're doomed to fail when you're surrounded by idiots.
Right. How's Sam Darnold look with Adam Gase?
Right.
How does he stand a chance? He doesn't stand a chance when those are your coaches. Those are your coaches, Joe Philbin, Dan Campbell, Adam Gase, his offensive coordinators in Miami.
Dude, it's invaluable.
Thank you, Dan. Yeah. Mike Sherman, Bill. I don't know who these guys are. Mike Sherman, I do. Remember the bozo coach of the Packers?
Of course.
Yeah. Who wound up coaching the high school on the Cape? Because that's what he is. He's a high school coach. That was his offensive coordinator for the first couple of years.
Yes.
Thank you. His offensive coordinators were Mike Sherman, Bill Labor. I don't know. Never heard of him. Zach Taylor, who I think is the guy who's the coach now in Cincinnati, Clyde Christensen, and then, my autocorrect changed this. Dowell Lagagia? I don't know. They changed the name.
I wanted to see is guys come out and compete and violently compete. And
Dan Campbell. Joe Philbin, Dan Campbell, Adam Gase. You don't stand a chance.
Never had a shot.
I don't care who your weapons are, you know? You don't stand a chance. So, like, there were my takeaway last night is I watched that game, and there were times where I was watching that game where I said to myself, "Who are these quarterbacks? I don't recognize them. They're awesome. They're both awesome. Like, who am I watching here?" And all the hype that you've heard about Josh Allen, I think you saw glimpses of it. Now, certainly not 60 minutes of it, and he reverted and made some mistakes, and you know, sort of fell into some of his bad habits. But he made some plays in that ball game last night. Well, I'm sorry. If you don't recognize the potential there, you're just not watching. Or you don't want to, you don't want to give it to him.
No, there's a lot of talent there. The kid's got a hose for an arm, for one. But there's, you know, there's a young Ben Roethlisberger thing with Josh Allen. And if he could just get maybe better coaching or a better quarterback coach, yeah, I think there is more potential there.
I think he's getting there. There's no question he's getting there.
They still got to get the idiot out of him, though. He does some real dumb things.
So he's a longer project. I think
Roethlisberger's a good analogy. He's got a stronger arm, though. But anyway, go ahead.
This guy has a stronger arm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It comes out. He's got, I think he's like Favre Elway kind of arm. Like,
hold on. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Right. He's got a freaking rifle. And he's big and he can move. Like, he's package.
It's mano a mano.
Another one of these guys. Dan Campbell.
That guy was a jackass.
When you have pads on, you have to make the very most of that day.
He goes from Joe Philbin to Dan Campbell to Adam Gase.
Violently compete.
I'm
not telling these guys to go out and start throwing punches, but hey, if guys get a little bit heated and they get after it a little bit, you may have some of those.
Where was I? Oh, Josh Allen.
Yes.
He packaged, and he has gotten better, and maybe he's going to take longer than Mahomes or some of these guys who are ready year one, two, or three. Maybe he's going to be whatever. It's going to take 4 or 5. Favre took 4 or 5. Some of these guys take longer. So I don't know where it's going to stop with Allen, but if you haven't seen the progress, if you don't see what he's capable of, you're just, you know, just you're just not watching or don't want to give it up.
Oh, he's way better than he was last year already. Way better.
I mean,
some of the throws he makes now, you look at it and go, he couldn't make that throw last year. In fact, I'd say that in the early part of that game especially, there were throws that he made that you went, he didn't come close to making that throw a year ago, at least in the games when I saw against the Patriots. Not even close.
To me, the first quarter was, I think, even revealing. So a bad luck interception on his first series, like the second or third play, bounces off his receiver's hands into Malcolm Butler's hands, and Tennessee scores two plays later. By the way, did you see that first touchdown pass by Tannehill?
Yeah, great throw.
Freaking dime.
Dropped it right in there.
Freaking dime. Like, who are you?
So that's who you could be talking about here. Maybe that's what it just takes longer. It's been 6 years, well, and now he's reaching his potentials because he's around good coaches. Maybe that's what it is with Allen.
This is what I'm talking about. It's like, I have a portion of that game I'm watching. Who are these quarterbacks?
Right.
Like that first touchdown pass by Ryan Tannehill, I'm like, who the hell was that? What a ball that was. So anyway, you know, Josh Allen has real bad luck on that first series, and you would think that, okay, now he panics, or, you know, that adversely affects him. Nope, just the opposite. Buffalo goes right down the field. Allen picks up a 3rd and 13. He picks up a 3rd and 7 on a scramble. Then he's got 3rd and 10 in the red zone, and he hits a dart to David right over the middle for a touchdown, except Buffalo penalty. Got to bring it back. Now it's 3rd and 15. Did you see this play? It was 3rd and 15 right after they brought back the touchdown. He rolls to his left and throws to a guy standing on the sidelines for pick up the 3rd and 15. Did you see this throw?
Yes.
And that's Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, like just that throw. I'm not telling you he's that player or that he played that way for all 60 minutes. And then a couple plays later, he throws a P to the right. He throws a touchdown pass, and it's a tie ball game. I said, well, look at that. Look at that. He had some real bad luck on his first series, faces a bunch of 3rd and longs on the next series, picks them all up, leads them right back down, touchdown ball game. I'm like, okay, tip of the cap right
no,
there.
No, their offense looked good on that drive. I mean, you know, save for the stuff that put him in some of those positions. But I thought the Bills' offense, I went, wow, they're way better than they were a year ago. Way more explosive,
so
too.
So that sequence, that touchdown pass from Tannehill, I said, who the hell are you? And then what Allen did on that series going back down, like, who the hell are you? And then another, the one that really stood out to me was end of the second quarter. So going into the half, you've got Tennessee up 14-10. They're at their 10-yard line. This is after that Borrecas had like that 70-yard punt, and there was a penalty. He flipped the field, went from his 10 to their 10. So like a real momentum-changing sort of field-flipping punt. So there's 2:55 left. Tennessee's at their own 10-yard line. They're up 14-10. They're in control. Now that's Miami. They're taking a knee. They're bleeding the clock, and they're getting in the effing locker room. That's what Philbin does. That's what Gase does. And Dan Campbell, I can't even tell you what he does. That guy. But, you know, my whole life with Ryan Tannehill, that's manage him, get off the field, get to the locker room. We're up 14-10. Nope. 12 plays, 90 yards, all the way down the field. Finger roll, touchdown, going into the end zone. And that's another one. You look at it, go, who the hell is this?
No, that drive was balls.
That drive was money.
But that's Ryan Tannehill? Like, that's not Ryan Tannehill. Yes, that's Ryan Tannehill. And so that's impressive. I'm sorry. You got to tip your cap to Vrabel, what he's done with that quarterback who's unrecognizable in a good way, and that team who 2 practices in 16 days and was away from the facility for all that time, came out and played a real ball game, 1 pre-snap penalty on offense. That's impressive. If that Patriots did that, we'd spend all day with our Schmenzer on the, and I'd allow for it. I'd be like, "Yep, let's put our Schmenzers on the counter here and pleasure ourselves over Bill Belichick having 2 practices in 16 days and the other team stupider." Well, that's what you saw from the Titans last night. Tip of the cap. The Bills are still good. Bills are good. A lot of talent on that team.
I agree.
Their secondary isn't that great. Their defense has some holes.
Yeah, but they were missing. What's his name?
White. Tre'Davious White.
Yeah, he didn't play last night.
No, I know. But still, so, I don't know.
I think the Bills are pretty good.
A lot of talent on that team.
I think they're legit. I don't know if they're a Super Bowl winner, but they're legit. They're a good team.
Notice I haven't said anything other than there's a lot of talent on that team.
You don't like the coach?
I don't trust him.
Nor should you. There's the Buffalo Bills thing.
I think the coach is good. I think he's made progress there. 10 penalties last night.
Yeah.
They had all that prep time. They had more prep time. They had no excuse. Come out and be sloppy. 10 penalties. In that game, 10 penalties, 3 turnovers, 2 fumbles, 2 interceptions, 10 penalties. Like, well, they're the Bills. They're the Bills. They've improved with the quarterback. They've improved the roster greatly. The talent's good. I think the coach is decent. They're still the Bills. You can't take the Bills out of Buffalo. I don't trust them. That's why the Pats are going to win the division, because the Bills just are still the Bills. So those are impressions from last night. What are yours? 617-779-0985. To you right after this.
Sports. Boston's home for sports. 98.5. The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
By and large, we don't remember the last segment.
Felger and Mazz.
I mean, I don't remember what I said last segment.
I don't remember what I said 60 seconds ago.
Felger and Mazz.
We don't remember who we are or what we said last week.
Yeah, but Felger, I'm the highlight of your show.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Tannehill dropping under pressure, rolling to his right. He might run this in. Five. Tannehill. Touchdown. Titans with the finger roll.
Great case study. He's in Miami, and he's just a guy, Joe Average. Joe Average. Get him with Vrabel for a couple years. Last night, 21-28, 75%. Three touchdowns, no interceptions. Rushing touchdown, which you just heard. Another huge long scramble in the fourth quarter. Salt the game away. 129.3 rating. What did you say, Murray, since he got there? What are his splits?
Of course, I have to put that away. They are. He's so 36 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. He's 11-3 since he's been there. QB rating of 116.7, like I think you just said.
Okay, well, last night was 129.3, and I don't know if you're including postseason numbers as well, but either way, it's like winning quarterback, steady winning quarterback, playmaker.
That was just regular season games.
I mean, last year, he led the league in passer rating. Okay, he was number one. And I thought, oh, that's your classic flash in the pan. They're going to give him a big contract. They're going to regret it. He's going to regress, go back to what he was, and he's going to suck. Now he's fifth.
117.5 last year. This year, 110.8.
Yeah, he's been the same player.
Same guy.
Really? He's been the same player.
So far this year, 9 touchdowns, 1 interception. I mean, is that... I mean...
So, no, look, they've built
it. Tell me what that is. You know, you can't say that's a contract drive. He got his contract. You know, last year, fine. Contract drive. What's this year?
No, the only thing that I would say about Tannehill that I don't think he can do is if they have to win a shootout with Patrick Mahomes, can they do that? And my answer is probably not. But that's why they built the team the way they built it. They're going to be the kind of team that slows the game down, plays physical football, and relies on the quarterback to make good decisions and be efficient. That's what they're relying on him for, and he's doing it. I mean, again, he's not a gunslinger.
So here you go. 6 years in Miami, his quarterback rating is 87. So far in Tennessee, again, 115.4, according to Pro Football Reference. What's that about? Did he have a body transfusion? Did he get invaded by aliens and a body transfusion?
No, better situation.
Coaching.
Good coaching.
Coaching. It's coaching. It's coaching. And yes, Tennessee has a nice surrounding cast. Running back is pretty nasty, but he's just a running back. And yes, I like Davis and those receivers, but really, what are they? What are we talking about there? It's coaching. It's program. That's what it is.
Well, there had to be talent, right? I mean, people have always said, look at him. He looks like a quarterback. He was the 8th overall pick in 2012, you know? So there was something there.
Right. So maybe Vrabel just brought him to what he should be. And the combination of Joe Philbin, Dan Campbell, and Adam Gase, you know, ruined him, infected
him. Dan Campbell.
Troika of suck.
Holy crap. It's amazing. After Dan Campbell got his hands on him, it's amazing he's still in the league.
Okay. Let's start with your thoughts. Chuck in Ohio. Go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, real quick, the Bills were without both their starting cornerbacks last night and starting linebacker and their best running back. But besides that, I want to get to Josh Allen. The guy he reminds me of, and not so much from a physical standpoint, but from the leadership and how he doesn't flinch. He's like Steve Grogan. He reminds me so much of Steve Grogan. Like, he's not afraid of anything. He just plays, and the guys rally around him.
All right, you say
they really do.
You say you're from Ohio, but you reek of Buffalo. You better hope he's better than Steve Grogan.
From Ohio.
Okay. You better hope he's, you know.
This guy's more gifted than Grogan was.
Same toughness, fine. But, I mean, Grogan, again, was one of those guys who threw it like a can of paint. This guy
totally.
Can throw.
Oh, totally. No, look, Grogan had it. There's some arm strength with Grogan. This kid's more talented. I think he's a lot bigger, too. I don't remember how big Grogan was height-wise. This kid's, he's a giant.
There are some plays I say. He moves left and throws right. You know, he's one of those guys that can move to
he's an athlete,
to his offside and throw. He's not just rolling right. He's rolling left and throwing. He picked up a third down where he rolled left and stood there and stood there and stood there. And then I think it was Diggs that he hit for the first. I mean, he made up. At least a half dozen plays last night where you watched and you said, Jesus, like that's as good as it gets right there.
To me, the big things I've seen with him that's different is the shorter and intermediate throws he's better at. Like, you know, he can hit guys on the money now and the ball placement's better. Now, look, it's still not consistent. But do you remember last year against the Patriots up there? They'd have a guy wide open 15 yards and he'd chuck it 10 yards over his head. He wasn't even close.
And I still think he's capable of that.
Yes, like, he's got some of that. There's no question, but it's not nearly as bad as it was a year ago.
He's not there. He's not all the way where the Bills need him to be, but he's on his way.
Oh, he's gotten a lot better.
Stan in Medfield. Go ahead, Stan.
Hey, what's going on, guys? So, yeah, I think Josh Allen, he looked all right last night. Like, he seems he also, like, put on some weight maybe or some muscle in the offseason. He doesn't seem to be panicked as much out there on the field and not making those poor decisions. But as far as I'm concerned, last night, the highlight of my night last night was watching Derrick Henry stiff-arm Josh Norman and put him down on the ground. It was hysterical. There is not a football fan in this country, I swear, that does not dislike that man. He is a jackass.
That stiff-arm?
Oh, my God, was that awesome. That was so awesome.
Couldn't have happened to a better player, too.
Seriously,
I can't
yeah.
stand Josh
didn't
Norman.
He have that a thing with, like, OBJ when he was in,
yeah.
right? That
Carolina.
Was in OBJ, right? Like, I thought for some reason it was when Norman was in Washington. But anyway, whatever. That play with Henry, he tossed him aside like he was an eight-year-old. He just tossed him aside. I mean, and when you watch the replay, he's literally flying through the air. You loser. I'd retire if I were you. I would retire after that.
Mike in Nashua, go ahead, please.
Yeah, two quick things. I'm really excited that the Pats finally have some competition in the AFC East. Really looking forward to the two games with Buffalo. On the quarterback, you guys were comparing Josh Allen to Roethlisberger. I got another name for you because I'm watching him throw darts with his right arm. Drew Bledsoe.
No. This guy moves much better than Bledsoe.
Better, way better athlete.
Yeah.
Way better athlete. I mean, just because you know you were doing the Tannehill comparison, look at the numbers on Allen. Do you know what his completion percentage is this year?
I'm going to guess 70 just because you...
69.3%. Yeah. Last year, he was 58.8. Okay, like, and he's already got 14 touchdowns, 3 picks. A year ago, it was 20 for the year.
He is an MVP candidate.
Yes, he's been off the charts good. And again, the big one is that accuracy number. They're completing 70% of their passes. Now, it wasn't good last night. But overall... And I don't even know what the final number was last night, but it didn't feel anywhere nearly that good. Overall, they've been efficient. I mean, it's been impressive.
Okay, there's a lot of jumping off points from last night, whether it be the Bills and the competition in the division, the role of coaching and quarterback play, COVID, and, the Titans and them getting back on the field, looking the way that they look. What does that say? Who needs practice, says Maz, or is that a testament to Vrabel? Let me ask this. Do you consider Mike Vrabel a member of the Belichick coaching tree?
Nope.
Not really.
Nope. You know, if I ever get my, you know, if I ever get a chance to talk to Vrabel and interview him, that would be my question to him. That'd be my question. Do you consider yourself a member of the Belichick coaching tree?
What are we waiting for? Let's get him on the show.
He won't do it. I've asked a couple times.
You have?
During the offseason, he'll be more than willing to.
He won't come on with you? I thought he loved you.
Love, hate. Really, oh. really more the second
Which
thing.
Which cycle's he in now?
Yeah, right, exactly. But no, he hasn't. Well, we've requested him. But, you know, that would be my question. Do you consider yourself one of Belichick's guys?
Nope.
No way. There's no way he does. I mean, he's definitely learned from him. And there's definite things that, I mean, he has to have. Has to absorb something. He's a smart guy and Bill's the best. And so he obviously took some things from him. But he came in his own man, left his own man, and coaches in his own way. And he's not. He's not a member of the Belichick coaching tree. You don't get credit for him, Bill. You don't. It's all your little automatons, all your little do-boys are your tree. The Matt Patricias of the world, this group, that's your tree.
No independent thinking allowed in that group.
No, sir. Vrabel does not be considered. But anyway, that's one of the jumping off points from last night. So we'll get your thoughts on all of it. I do want to update you on the Cam Newton, Stephon Gilmore dinner from a couple Fridays ago. This is getting good. We'll do it right after Murray's update. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You can listen to Felger and Maz on your phone with the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
Frankly, it's what we deserve. We're a nation of idiots.
Felger and Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
But the realities are we recognize the season will continue to be unlike any other. Our session started today, like other meetings this year, with an update on our COVID protocols, our progress in a few areas, and where we'd like to improve. I'm proud of the way the players and our clubs have come together during these unprecedented times. We stressed again today that we cannot grow complacent. Not the players, not the coaches, not the rest of our personnel.
Okay, Roger Goodell. You'll hear some sound from him, too. He did a presser yesterday. Throughout the course of the day, can't get complacent. Meanwhile, this delicious little back and forth. Oh, I love it. I love it. See, I don't know anything. No one tells me anything. I have no sources. Like someone like who might be a source, like Vrabel you just mentioned, wants nothing to do with me. So there's like, I don't know anything. I'm in the dark on most everything.
Yeah.
Don't give me that look. I get very little. Every now and then, Maz, I'm not like you. I don't.
I'm not as connected as you think I am.
Well,
but go ahead, go. I want to hear your side of this.
Well, my side of it is that that's, you know, I'm clueless. But the benefit to that is I don't owe anybody anything.
Right.
So I just get to sit back and I don't got to protect any team. Or, you know, kiss ass to any player. I just get to
launch,
tell you what I think and fire away. Yeah, no sacred cows. It's great. So a thing like this is just delicious to me. Cam Newton and Stephon Gilmore's dinner on Friday, which was reported by Adam Schefter on a Philly radio station a week ago Friday or whatever, week ago Monday, whenever this was. Now, all this stuff is over a week old. Yesterday, Stephon Gilmore's wife tweeted that, you know, I'm going to save you all a bunch of time. There was no dinner. They weren't out to dinner. Adam Schefter was on EEI this morning, standing by the report. And you said Mrs. Gilmore had something this afternoon as well?
Yep. She said 2 hours ago, she said exactly, I'm not going back and forth with anybody. I said what I said. That's what she tweeted. That was about 2 hours ago, according to her timeline. And purely just as I'm scrolling here on her timeline, I just want to share that 20 hours ago, she said, sorry, guys, I don't know who the Boston talk show host people are. Who was talking about me? LOL, I'm innocent. And I would say, we didn't accuse you of being guilty of anything. We're just reading what you tweet.
Well, now everyone's talking about it, too. And what this really comes down to, it's a beef over semantics.
Well, so here's I just read from Michael Hurley, who gets right into this, which is just the guy that I love, you know, because, again, he's hyper-defensive, bitchy Patriot fan. But you see, love him to death, but, you know, I mean, that's what he is, hyper-defensive, bitchy Patriots fan. Hurley's headline on CBS Boston Sports, Adam Schefter refutes Stephon Gilmore's wife stands by report of Gilmore-Newton dinner. He writes that, ladies and gentlemen, we've got ourselves a good old-fashioned source off. On one side, you've got the most plugged-in NFL reporter in the world, Schefter. In the other corner, it's Gabrielle Gilmore, the wife of Patriots star cornerback and reigning NFL Defensive Player of the Year, Stephon Gilmore.
Leave me alone, Mom. Sourcing off.
Yeah. One of those contenders knows Gilmore rather well. The other might not know him at all. But that's not stopping him from standing by his report that Stephon ate dinner with Cam Newton on Friday, the night before the scheduled Kansas City game, even though Gabrielle says it did not happen. Quote, Cam Newton and Stephon Gilmore had dinner Friday night, Schefter said on WEEI on Wednesday morning. I don't know where they ate, but they had dinner together Friday night. Schefter relented on the quote-unquote out-to-dinner portion of the report, says Hurley. Michael, I meant to bring in my Wells report, and I forgot. Because this is what we're going to do now. We're going to parse out single words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, now it's a beef over semantics.
Schefter relented on the out-to-dinner portion of the report.
The Gilmore Guide.
While also taking issue with his report being called a report at all. Quote, I was doing a radio show. I don't remember the specific language that I used, Schefter shared with EEI. I thought I had said that they had dinner together. Maybe I said they were out to dinner. I don't remember, okay? The semantics, again, because I don't know exactly where they had dinner, to be perfectly frank, but I don't believe it was out to dinner, like in Boston, right? But they had dinner together on Friday night, period. Quote, Hurley writes, Schefter had been pressed on his report during his interview on EEI because Gabrielle said Tuesday afternoon that the reported, quote, there was no dinner out. She tweeted, I'm going to help you out so you guys stop reporting false news. So Schefter never really said they were out.
Right.
Do we have the actual original Schefter thing they said on Philly? Go ahead.
I happen to believe, I was told that in the New England area over the weekend that Cam Newton and Stephon Gilmore were spotted having dinner together on Friday night. So, and I was aware of that over the weekend. So to hear that he tested positive, I got to be honest, is not overly surprising to me. You know, if you're at a dinner table with somebody who's got the virus, you know, there's a chance I would think that you're going to get the virus. And so that's what we're dealing with this morning. We're dealing with, I think it's a crisis.
Yeah, I love the crisis part.
Spotted having dinner.
He didn't say they were out.
He never said out.
No, he said spotted, yeah.
Cam Newton and Stephon Gilmore were spotted having dinner together.
Okay, so they said that they were just spotted having dinner, which
I guess...
Was
someone peeking through their curtains?
Well, yeah. So I guess would lead you to believe they were out because the way that's phrased.
Yeah, positive, I got to be honest, is not overly surprising to me. You know, if you're at a dinner table...
So he didn't say that at dinner out. He just said they're having dinner together and they were spotted.
I have a theory as to why he said it the way he said it. But anyway, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, my theory is that he heard it from the organization. And so the way to cover his ass is to say, yeah, they were spotted having dinner together. By who? Where? When? Like, you know, he doesn't give you any of that.
Yeah, he doesn't want to say according to team sources.
Right. So he buried that one. He was talking to the team, and they said, yeah, they had dinner together. And so he said spotted. You know, as if he was, again, so were someone peeking through the curtains at the Gilmore house?
So she says there was no dinner out. I'm going to help you out so you guys stop reporting false news. All right. So she's the one who brought out the dinner out thing.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. But then again, that leads all the little baby Patriots fans and media to go, see, fake news. They were making it up. There was no dinner out. Schefter never said there was dinner out.
Yeah, Gilmore stayed in his kitchen and Newton was at his place.
ESPN made stuff up before. Remember Mortensen?
Yeah, they did it again.
Schefter noted during his EI interview that he was not certain whether the dinner happened out in public or in one of Gilmore's or Newton's homes. However, writes Hurley, his initial report in Philadelphia indicated that the two players were, quote unquote, spotted. An indication that the duo must have been in public for their meal in order to be seen. Again, Hurley's back with the Wells report. I'll go toe-to-toe to you, Hurley, with the Wells report. You give me that highlighter, and I will bury you. You know it. I'm the only guy in New England who can do it because I've read it more than you. I know it better than you. So I'll go. If you want to go into this, I'll go into this. You better believe it. We'll parse every word. I'm happy to do it. This is delicious. All because the Hurleys of the world can't accept that Cam Newton got COVID, most likely off campus, and that you started the whole thing. Meaning, instead of being able to blame Goodell or the locker room in Kansas City or any of this stuff you normally want to do, you're stuck with the fact that none of it would have happened if your players hadn't gotten COVID outside the building, which is pretty much, I think, guaranteed where it happened. Because I think they're tight as a drum inside. And I think they're doing all the right things inside. I think it's gotten off campus. So Cam Newton and or Stephon Gilmore went off campus, maybe let their guard down, and introduced the virus to the team, which is why this whole mess started. And whether it was innocently and a mistake that just couldn't be avoided or they got careless, it's somewhere in there. The fact is they brought it in and they started it. And this is why the whole league had to be turned on its ear, is because your players got COVID. But you can't accept that for some reason. You just don't want to have that. You just can't bring yourself to admit it. So now we're going to parse out the words of, did he say out to dinner or spotted with dinner? I'm going to get my highlighter and go back over. It's like, you guys are great. I love it. I love it. Bring it. Give me more.
Yeah, it's time for the dinner report in context.com. Seriously, spotted in quotes, Hurley. Next time next time I see him, I'm going to slap that little twerp.
There was going to be so much change. New quarterback, new uniforms, going to be an all-new feel. My hope was it was going to get a little less insufferable, the whole experience. Nope. Still just the same thing.
So they're also getting on Schefter, they being the, you know, baby Patriots fans.
Such a better word for it, though.
Oh, my God. There's only one word to use for you folks. Can't use it, even on the off-air show, as I've come to learn. So the fact that Schefter only said it on radio in Philly and didn't report it on ESPN is somehow a sign that he doesn't believe it or is just throwing it out there. Hurley writes, considering that dinner would have been and still is a very newsworthy tidbit regarding the NFL and COVID-19, and considering Schefter shared that tidbit on a local radio interview instead of his national platform at ESPN, the tip may have fallen short of some of his usual reporting standards.
Oh my God. Jesus, Hurley.
And his wavering on Wednesday.
Seriously, wait, you know what? When did he turn into this big of a little bitch?
He's always been this. What are you talking about?
This is worse.
When it comes to the Patriots? He says, and Schefter's wavering this morning regarding exactly where the dinner took place does indeed expose some shakiness in the report.
Amazing.
It's so great. You got COVID. You got it. You started it. The reason they had to change the schedule and flip everything on zero is because your players got COVID. Fact. Why don't you just accept the fact as opposed to dinking around with your highlighter and going back to the dinner report in context.com?
Viral load in context.com.
I love it. I love it. You got to protect the team or something or a player or something. So you're all sort of pretzel twisting. When you could just start with the very simple fact that 30 of the 32 teams have figured it out to the degree where they didn't have to postpone games or have other games postponed or change bye weeks or change other team schedules. 30 of the 32. You're one of the two that have. That's just a fact. And so you can go through the tapes. You can bring out the highlighters. You can do it. I love it. And I want it. I want it. I want it. Bring it to me. I'm ready. But the fact, you can't get around the fact that you're one of only two teams that had to turn this whole thing on its ear because your players went off campus and got it.
So in a manner of speaking, what you're saying is that Belichick and Vrabel are screwing up the NFL.
If I had Twitter, I think I would have tweeted that, at least giving you the double barrel sausage eggplant emoji if I'd seen it.
Double eggplant. With four meatballs.
Okay. Back to your thoughts on this and anything else right after these words.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Sits down with Zoe for his exclusive game day interview all season long.
Big win against the Eagles.
Everybody did a good job.
Now back to Felger and Mads. Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
There was a report, I believe, from Adam Schefter who said that Stefon had had dinner with Cam Newton on Friday night. Was the team aware of that before the trip to KC?
Yeah, again, all the information and everything that involved in testing and, you know, contact and everything else. All the information that we had, we, you know, processed through, again, medical people on our end, medical people in the league, and followed the protocols. I feel like we did everything that we could control. I think we did everything properly. With the extra planes, the extra buses, the same day travel, et cetera, there's, you know, multiple things we could list there. So, in terms of a lot of individual specific questions, I'd say all those get thrown into the, you know, general medical field.
That's Bill, and I think last Monday. Again, so this is a week old. Last Monday, basically, I think, confirming that they knew about it because he didn't refute it.
Correct.
It was just sort of a non-answer that, I don't know, I took it as kind of like a tacit admission.
Yeah, I mean, again, he, you know, the fact that he was evasive about it tells me I still believe that the info came from the Patriots.
Let me ask you.
Because, again, what? Because if they didn't eat out, but they ate together, how would Adam Schefter know that? Again, what's he get? Someone in the security at Cam Newton's building?
Is it important that they ate together? Should we care?
Yes.
Why?
Yes, because it led to the absence of a second good player on the team or availability of a second good player on the team. I think it's newsworthy. Now, again, is it like a back, you know, is it a back page story? Is it a huge deal? No, but is it newsworthy? Yes. Yes, it's newsworthy. The quarterback of the team had COVID. One of his teammates, who happens to be the defensive best defensive player of the year and the best defensive player on the team, had dinner with him and now has COVID. What are we supposed to assume?
It's newsworthy because of the link, because you'd like to know, you know, how Stephon Gilmore got it. And, well, there's a link because he had dinner with Cam Newton, who was the first player on the Patriots who had it, right? So it's newsworthy there. Do I care, ultimately? No, I don't.
I mean, again, like, if you were to say to me just casually, there's no COVID story, they had dinner together, would I care? No. But COVID makes it newsworthy.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question is, were the teams careless, or did they do everything they possibly could to make sure that their players were safe and the games were played? I think that's a pertinent question to ask for any of these teams. Were you doing the right things? And so I think that that falls in line with that question.
Of course it does.
We'd ask them any other team. We're asking it of the Titans. We asked it of the Raiders. We'll ask it of any team that has to have players sat out or games postponed or the schedule refigured. We're going to ask, did you do everything you possibly could to avoid that? And so we ask it of the Patriots.
Yeah, and I'm sure, I don't know if this has been asked down there in these terms, but and maybe people are afraid to because it's Bill. But I would even say, does the team discourage players from getting together away from the facility in social environments?
I would hope so, because they discourage it in the building.
Right.
They don't let them get together in the building. They don't let them eat together in the building. They seat 10 feet apart, solo, when they eat in the building. So they're telling the guys, this is what we have to do to stay safe. If they then leave the building and come within 10 feet and eat with each other, that sort of nullifies what the Patriots are trying to do during the day, doesn't it?
Mike, now that I think of it, okay, when a team has good chemistry and they all get along together, we make big deals out of the fact that they go and eat dinner together. They all, the whole team was at the dinner. They do this. So we're willing to ask those questions and get that information when it serves the team benefit. Well, now it's the opposite. These are unique circumstances. And if they are getting together outside of the facility socially and they're not taking the necessary precautions, and then both guys come down with COVID, how is that not newsworthy?
I mean, I think it is.
I'm not yelling at you. I'm just...
No, yell at me. I find it more fun than newsworthy is what I do. Especially, you know, when the media cartel and the babies out there start circling the wagons and start underlining words and picking out words, were they dining out or not dining out? Like, then it becomes fun. So I think it's as fun a topic as a newsworthy topic. But it's newsworthy only if you want to play the game of did you do everything you could to get the games played and keep everyone healthy, which I think we've done with every team. I mean, I don't know. We have anyway. When the Florida Marlins had to shut down their team because they had team or were out in Atlanta, right? They went from South Beach to Atlanta. We looked at them. When the Philadelphia Phillies had all those players have to shut it down because they had a team gathering at a local establishment, we took a look at that. When the Raiders had that charity event, we looked at that. With the Titans and their practice at the prep school, we look at it. So, what, we're not going to look at the Patriots? So that's why it is newsworthy to me. Again, we will continue with this. We have Paul Perillo standing by. We'll get a member of the Patriots organization, high-ranking member, to come in and speak for the team.
Did we skip an hour of the program?
No, we're going to do that at 4 o'clock.
Okay.
He was just teasing it.
That's a
long-term tease.
Long tease. We're going to play the long game on that one. Paul's going to come in at 4 and help us with that, and we'll take your phones on it next hour. But we do have some other items we want to get to, some baseball thoughts, and some Bruins ripping. Basketball thoughts and some Bruins ripping. So we'll do that all after Murray's 90-second update here, no commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.